much. We have a few more minutes for questions and answers, and we'll have microphones around the room for anyone who might have questions for any of us, and maybe the three of us could just, well, there's no chairs, we just hang out up here. Yes.
I had a question for you, Nick. In working with children, if you go online with them to view their profiles or MySpace or Facebook, what ethical issues are there in terms of if they disclose something, abuse, say, neglect, that's visible through that site as opposed to in a session? How do you handle that? And I guess you could speak to this as well.
Do you want to go first? I have some comments.
Yeah,
as well.
I'll probably defer to Dr. Barnett, but I think setting the frame before you even go on the web is really crucial. You've already set the frame with respect to how you're going to deal with that type of information before treatment has begun. So be conscious about this is another avenue to learn secrets, and that you take those secrets very, very seriously, and so that when you venture onto the web together, then they have an expectation of what you may or may not do.
I think it's really a fascinating question, because most laws that regulate mental health professionals and health professionals in general require that if you observe or learn of information to suggest abuse or neglect of a minor or a member of a vulnerable population, you're required by law to report it. It's very possible that if a professional is accessing a client's online information without their permission, we're not anticipating finding that information. So we're thinking, oh, well, let me just see what I can find out about this person. Or, he seems very narcissistic. Let me see what kind of information he's sharing on the web. And then you find out about the abuse or neglect. My sense is if you learn about it in the context of your professional role, then you're obligated to report it. And that's going to be a significant violation of trust and a violation of the informed consent agreement. And so that's why I was saying earlier, any of this searching online or accessing information really should be shared and discussed beforehand, because you don't really know what you're going to find.
I'll just add, I've had patients hospitalized based on private information on their live journal blog, and it just speaks to the importance of us needing to accept that you spend a lot of time online sharing secrets with friends, and so you might find yourself in having information that you didn't expect to have, but because a friend told a teacher who told the parents who told you, and then having to make a very difficult treatment decision.
Thank you. I'm just wondering about, my experience comes from my own kid who, when he was on Facebook, came in and said, "Mommy, you need to read this," that somebody was talking, actually it was one of his teachers from the year before, was talking about he was suicidal, he felt like cutting himself, he felt like killing himself, but he was too much of a coward. All the kids are freaking out and responding, "We love you, we love you." And luckily my kid brought it to my attention. But I wonder if that's part of how we should educate our kids. When they are seeing something that they can't handle, to get someone else involved and to explain that they're really, I mean, they are breaking each other's confidences, but in a way that's healthy. And I wonder if that comes up at all for you.
Well, I would just, again, even though you're describing what happens in our personal lives as opposed to the professional, I think many of the same issues are present. And this notion of educating our kids, I think, is a very important one, because there's something special about the online environment that feels different than the real world. And, again, things can be disclosed that we might not share normally in face-to-face contact. And many young people might believe there are different rules there. And so to educate children about, no, there aren't different rules. And just because it's said there doesn't mean it stays there. that if you have a concern, you know, we want to know about it. I had a similar situation to yours with my daughter, where a classmate in her high school shared information about being suicidal online. She shared it with me. We had a discussion. The one option was doing nothing. Another was trying to reach the young person directly, or that person's parents, someone from the school, or calling the police. Efforts to contact the young person weren't fruitful. We did contact the police. They came to our house, collected information, went to his house, contacted his parents and him. There was an intervention, and then the parents and the young person actually contacted my daughter later, you know, to thank her, their appreciation that she didn't keep it to herself when he had disclosed it to his entire network of friends and only one person took action. So it really highlights a very big issue for us to consider.
Hi. Great talks. Thank you. I think it needs to be said that this notion of friends and friending people is a bit of a con. I think these in Facebook and MySpace, these aren't friends. This is a contact list or an address book. The notion that you can have 150 friends, you know, by clicking a button, is really, I think, a bit of a con and a marketing spin by the people that have intelligently planned these sites out. I think that has to be said from outset. But the youth of today somehow, I think, misinterpret the word friend and what it is to be friended. And of course that has value, but I think it's really, really important to make the distinction between a friend, as in a contact, and a friend, as in somebody who you have a perhaps lifelong bond with. The distinction between the virtual world and the real world absolutely needs to be made clear, I think. Would you like to comment on that?
That seems relevant to the superficial nature of relationships you spoke about, right?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Thanks for bringing that up. A lot of the, when you look at the research about the frequency of messages that occur between a given user and their contacts, you see that the so-called friends really are no more than names on a list. So your point is well taken. And then we need to think about why would someone want to have 8,000 contacts on their list, and then that speaks to how a given person feels fulfilled or how they want to portray themselves to this massive audience. So you're right, the friend isn't a proper term, and for those of us who use online networks ourselves, you know, you might consider it, how big is your network and how often do you communicate with the people on your list? Thanks for bringing that up.
I just want to comment on what the young woman said before. I think that we need to train people to be bystanders and then to be active bystanders, and the internet allows us to do two things: to report anonymously and to report online, to do crisis intervention, as you were explaining, and that we can and should train our children to be active bystanders who do report to us and also to agencies that may be online. Schools in the United States have a internet-based online reporting service. One is called Report It, and it covers the entire school district, and anything that they're uncomfortable about, any bomb threats, any suicide, eating disorders, or anything else, they can report either anonymously or with, identifying information, and then it goes through a chain of command. So I agree that we need to train our kids and that the internet is a perfect tool for us to teach them how to be active bystanders.
Yeah, I think the issue of personal responsibility is what we're talking about here, and I think is of vital importance. And interestingly, I've heard recently of on many college campuses, if a youth is involved in underage drinking and one of their peers are drinking to excess and maybe putting themselves at risk, it's a very dangerous situation, they can call a certain or contact a certain location on campus, someone will come and intervene, and then the young person who made the call or the report will not suffer any penalties. They have to participate in an alcohol education awareness program, but even though they are acknowledging underage drinking, which violates the campus's policies and the law, and they could be expelled, they're not, because they're trying to encourage that responsibility and the support and to not keep these things a secret. So I think the same could be applied online, as you're describing. I think it's a great idea and a great point.
That just made me think about a new role for maybe a helper or a service provider that I've actually heard twice in the last week I've heard about, which is the role of a kind of a helper surfing, proactively going online and finding the people who are very distressed and who might be talking about suicide and proactively reaching out to them and offering them services. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline in the United States, they have one person who does that, you know, as part of her job. she does some of that. And I've also heard Azi Barak's program in Sahar in Israel, also they have a few people who do that. So it's just a new, I think, as far as service provision, a new area that we could think about as far as funding and as far as designing programs moving forward, that's a role that could be very helpful. So it's not just the social networks and the randomly finding people, but really actively reaching out and finding people.
You might want to take a look at the Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine. Maybe 3 months ago, published an intervention study. Moreno et al. Went onto MySpace, looked up publicly available profiles that had references to sex or substance abuse, did an intervention where half the group got an email message from one of their clinicians saying, "Did you know that because you're posting this type of information, you're more at risk for blah, 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 blah?" Given that, I guess, posting this type of information is correlated with more sexually transmitted diseases and more substance abuse. So then they followed up with the intervention group later and to see if that information had been removed from their profiles. And a significant proportion had removed the references to sex but not substance abuse. So does that correlate with reality? I don't know. But exactly. Don't know.
Yeah, it also raises the question of how much one posts online is a cry for help or bragging and showing off. And that would be something interesting to study as well. But your point about prevention rather than response is very important. So I believe it's time for lunch. Thank you all so much. Thanks so much.